The following is a Stick Boy We Talk production.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
I am the man.
If you're the man, what the rock is talking. Woo! The best there is.
Welcome to the first One Fall podcast of 2020. We've had a little bit of a break, but we are back, and we've got at least two more episodes following this one, the decade of the decade podcast and the year in review. I'm joined by Mo. Josh isn't here, but we got Mo, so that's positive.
Yeah, I'd like to think it's an upgrade.
I think so too. And there's been nothing major in pro wrestling at all this last little bit. I guess the biggest story is Big Show came back, right? That's it. That's the only major thing.
It is funny because we were asked on the previously recorded best of, you know, podcast of the year if we thought Big Show was coming back, and we're both like, no. And then he came back.
Whatever. Yeah, I saw that, and I was just like, oh, well, there's Big Show. Why not go with someone that's 47 instead of a young Rock?
Is that how old he is?
Yeah, he's 47, and he's been wrestling for a long time.
Oh, man. I knew he was wrestling for a long time. I didn't realize he was 47.
Yeah, he's getting up there in age. And
makes sense, though. I mean, 96 he debuted, right, or 95?
I think it's 93. I think he debuted in 93.
No, I don't think it was that early. I think 95. I think it was the Dungeon and Doom stuff versus Hogan, and they brought in this guy as his son. I believe he made his first appearance when Hogan might have been taking on Vader even. Are you Googling it?
Yes, I'm definitely Googling it. 94 is when
94, okay. So yeah, he would have made his first appearance one of the pay-per-views, just on like a, you know, introduced as Andre's son, essentially, in 94 then, in a pay-per-view where Hogan was taking on Vader. Maybe it might even have been Bash at the Beach.
I still remember his debut, because I reordered St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Me and my father had ordered that, and I remember his debut in WWF. Just like, oh my god, who is this mountain of a man? Because Canada, I'd never seen WCW, so I was.
You hadn't seen it. It was available at that point.
I had not seen WCW. My household was solely WWE. Now times are very different, but it was the first time you see him, you're just like, it's a monster of a man.
You're introduced to Paul White.
Yeah.
In that pay per view, and you know, and he comes out, and he's a huge man, and. And then he loses to Stone Cold Steve Austin the next night on Raw.
Way to kill. It's at WCW. It was absolutely that. All right. Let's kill off another one from WCW. Yeah. What other big thing happened this week?
Morrison is back. Sheamus is back.
Drew McIntyre's starting to get over as a babyface. They're starting to let him. He's the last 2 weeks, he's kind of shown some personality, and he's been murdering guys in the ring, and he's starting to become a baby.
He's murdering baby faces, but hey, still, people love an alpha male.
And he's the guy that I would go with if you can have anyone take on Brock. But we know Brock entering number one into the Royal Rumble will undoubtedly be eliminated by Cain Velasquez, and Cain Velasquez will be WWE champion in April.
Damn, I hadn't thought of that.
That was the first and only thing that popped into my head. Who did you think was going to eliminate Brock?
I hadn't thought about it. Honestly, I don't see anybody eliminating Brock. On the other hand, he's not going 60. So,
oh, God, no.
You know. And it's not going to be Keith Lee. So I don't know. I mean, that Kane, that makes sense. That'd be a way to rehab him.
The trilogy, man. The trilogy.
Yeah.
But shifting gears, we can talk about WWE's shoddy booking at times. and hope they won't do anything with McIntyre, but we can talk.
Let's talk about the shoddy booking of New Japan instead, huh?
Yeah, I know. It's just terrible. They had run-ins and false finishes and dusty finishes. None of it was good. None of it was enjoyable.
When on Monday morning, I went and looked on New Japan 1972, or the English language website, and it's just to see the New Year Dash card. And the very first comment was, hopefully they'll have a good night and get to make up for the horrendous booking of last night, of night two. And I was just like, you moron. Like, maybe the booking may be controversial at times. Maybe it's not what you'd want to do. Maybe it's not how you think they should go. It may be controversial. But horrendous booking is Vince Russo. This is never horrendous booking, just controversial. Those are different things. So what an idiot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love both nights. We're going to run through them. Just quickly, I want to hit on something before we get there. The original plans with Kenny Omega was revealed by Dave Meltzer, and it would go like this. Kenny would have beat Tanahashi at Wrestle Kingdom last year. Then he would have gone to MSG, and he would have wrestled Okada, and I would have been there, and they would have wrestled to a 60-minute time limit draw, or Kenny would have just eked out a win. And then we would get to the double dash for gold, whatever they're calling it, was still very much in the plans. And it would have gone Kenny Ibushi night one and Naito and Okada night two as well for the IC title. They put the IC title on Okada. And then the final night would have been Omega versus Naito, and Naito would have won. The only thing that sucks about that is I didn't get to see Kenny Omega and Okada in a 60-minute time limit draw.
Because no kidding.
That's the only the ending of I don't agree with the ending on how they would have positioned things. I still would have done Okada and Naito for the final night, but just Omega and Okada, Mo. I could have been there.
Well, not only that, but and I mean, we knew well ahead of time that it wasn't happening. But the one thing is, you know what? You want to see that match, but that may not have been the ideal way to see it. Yeah. Just as much as it is MSG with the ROH and what a long show that is and all the wrestling on that weekend, it might have been like, this is so great, but it's too long.
Yeah.
And you run that risk, you know? So it's not just how good, where the match is and how good it is, but when it is you know, the extenuating circumstances. So yeah. That's the only thing I can say to try and console you, because really that sucks that you lost out.
Yeah. Well, hopefully I can see Omega. That's my goal, is to see Kenny wrestle.
I got to get to a Wrestle Kingdom and a New Year Dash. That was really hard.
You look at just both nights and just the feeling and the wrestling and the crowd, and just felt great. Like, it felt like a big show with big fights in it, and it constantly felt like a big deal. Even the little matches had almost a little bit more shine on them, where you're like, all right, let's get going, because I'm ready to see this.
I love, and it's not just a new, I mean, it's every pretty much New Japan crowd, but I mean the Tokyo Dome is just, everything is just elevated, right? I love the way the crowd sounds when they get into a match.
Yeah,
it's not what we have here. It's not dueling chants and you know, all this stuff where the crowd feels like they're part of the act. You know, it's legitimately when, you know, people are cheering, and the more they get into the match, you hear this roar, and the roar will be constant and just build and get louder and louder and louder. And it's just this hum that gets louder with the people cheering and getting more and more into it until they're going crazy at the end of the match when it's done well. And, you know, the crowds here don't react that way. They're not trained to react that way.
No,
they're trained to react for the big spots. So even if they're into a finish, often they'll be quiet until the next big spot, you know, and like I say, and they'll be, the chants are just, you know, there's just, when's the last time that like 95% of a crowd was chanting for somebody in WWE? Maybe Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, I was WrestleMania
30.
Yeah, I think that would be it. I think the last moment that I can recall off the top of my head is when he was in the cage with Bray. He's bouncing Bray off the cage and he's doing the yes, and the whole crowd thinks he's going to do the yes, 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 and he just does the very slow yes, yes, and he starts to build to it before he does the running knee, and the whole crowd was into it, and you saw the whole crowd was into it when he was on top of that cage. Like, that wide shot was just incredible.
I'll give you that, but the problem is, coming into the match, it was 50-50. Or if anything, it was for Wyatt. Yeah. They turned them the way that they did the match, but, you know, yeah, it's... Anyways, so that's one of the things I love about watching New Japan.
Yeah, and absolutely.
The crowd... The heat is real, you know.
Yeah.
When they hate somebody, they really hate them, and it's the right type of heat. And when they're loving a match, it's just the right type of response. It gives it that sports feel even more. Let's get to the shows, because there's a hell of a lot to talk about.
Yeah. All right. So we're gonna start off with the first night, and we're gonna talk about Juice and Thunder Ligers. It's a 4 or 5 man tag team match. Well, an 8 man tag team match. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of names I can't pronounce, but there are a lot of legends that came out for this one and were wrestling against Juice and Thunder Liger, or with him. You just feel how important Liger is to professional wrestling and it's to that New Japan crowd. And it's crazy how many people came out to see and how important he was to them, and to see his last two matches.
Yeah, it's if anything, it was tough for anything to follow it for a long time on both nights, you know. And that's the thing. I mean, we've seen it here. I mean, but he is on the level in Japan of what a Ric Flair is here.
Yeah.
You know, in the Ric Flair retirement match with Shawn Michaels, right? Like, it's that same level. Like, he is that level of star.
And you get that. And it's crazy to think. I would think that he would have had one match, but I get why they had two. What would you have done? Would you have given him just one match, or would you have done the two?
I mean, he wanted to wrestle his contemporaries, and then he wanted to put over the young next generation. It's what he wanted. It's not what I would do. It's what he wanted, and that's what they did.
Which you I'm glad. It's one of those nice things that they did, where they gave him that moment and let him dictate it.
So I mean, I was young, but he was on excursion here in Calgary at Stampede Wrestling. And,
he wrestled with Stampede Wrestling.
Yeah, he was in Stampede. This is where he went on excursion. I think he might have gone to Mexico, and so he was here without a mask on. You know, and it wasn't until years later I found out that this guy I've seen, this Japanese guy who was brought in, and he wasn't put over or pushed to the moon. He didn't get title shots or anything. He was here. He was clearly here to learn and learn the dungeon style. You know, and. And I think that you can see that in him. And, you know, yeah, it was years later I learned that this guy was Jushin Thunder Liger. I'm pretty sure if you typed in Jushin Thunder Liger Stampede Wrestling into YouTube, you can see you'll find one of his matches. Him, you know, a very young Jushin Thunder Liger without his mask on. And so, yeah, it's kind of surreal because, like, you know. That's right out of his training, you know, his excursion. I think, like I said, I think he was here in Mexico is where they sent him.
97 and 98, he wrestled. He was trained under Hart.
Can't be 97. 97, he was already a star. Best of the Super Juniors, 94 was the match against.
Sorry, 87, 89. Okay. I got my nines and my sevens all mixed up. His experience there led him to refer to Hart as a very, very tough man. And he would return to Calgary in 89 when the Flames won the cup.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he wasn't the other guy that was really impressive that was went on to be a legend was Hirohashi, who also came over. And if you're not familiar with him, look him up. He's another legend that went on excursion to Stampede Wrestling in Calgary and was huge.
I don't know him, so this gives me something to watch.
Yeah, you got to look that up. He and another guy wrestled Owen Hart and Chris Benoit for the Orient Express and the Viet Cong Express and these different things. But they had a tag match that went 60 minutes. Then they came back the next week and they wrestled a 90-minute Broadway. Bassarab and Hart, Owen Hart versus them, Hirohashi. And it was like, it's amazing stuff. So, you know, obviously, because of Stampede Wrestling, the way they do things, it's just clipped. You don't get the full match, but just imagine that. Just imagine that. That's what put that territory back on fire was that juniors. And so anyways, this Hirohashi was one of them. He went on to have maybe the bloodiest match of all time against Great Muta. But, you know, legendary, became a legendary figure and actually ended up in Parliament now.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting transition in career-wise.
It happens fairly often, actually, in Japan, a wrestler will end up in Parliament. When I say fairly often, I mean more than it happens here.
that's an interesting fact. I didn't know that. You know, you look at the match, and you're definitely right, because the next couple matches, it feels emotionally you're spent, and you need a couple filler matches to get you back in. And the third match after Liger's first retired match is Finn Juice Robinson and David Finlay taking on the Gorillas of Destiny, Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa. And I thought it was a decent match. I enjoy the Gorillas of Destiny. I thought David Finlay looked really good in this match, and it's nice. Yeah, I was very curious to see, because I was like, well, Juice is more than likely going to beat Moxley on night two, so I can't see them getting the title. So I was generally a little surprised that they got the straps from the Gorillas of Destiny.
I really liked the match. I think it might have been like my third or fourth favorite match of the night. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I liked the psychology of it, and it was a little different than you usually see. Yeah, Finlay looked fantastic again. Like I say, he's looking better than ever, and he's wrestling better than ever. Like you're really noticing a difference since he came back. This isn't the same guy that as a year ago that showed up in ROH and lost in the first night to Hot Sauce. You know, what's his name? Something Williams. You know, like this guy, he looks like a star and he's wrestling great. So, yeah, I really enjoyed the match. I had a lot of fun with it. I kind of figured Finn Juice would win. But, yeah, I mean, we'll see. I like where they're going with that, what they're doing with them and who they set up as the challengers.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on. Next was Violent Bloody, a Texas death match. For the IWGP United States Championship, no DQs, no pinfalls, victory by count of 10, KO or submission. We have everyone dies, Lance Archer as the champion, going up against the man that never lost the title, the Lunatic Fringe.
The Death Rider.
The Death Rider, John Moxley. I enjoyed this match. I've really enjoyed what Moxley's been doing since he got away from WWE. I thought this was a good match. The blood pouring from Archer's elbow kind of made me cringe a little, but I thought this was a great match.
It was a lot of fun, and it was unique for the whole weekend, you know.
Yep.
And that really helped it too. It helped us stand out. You know, if you're always doing blood and guts, it doesn't work. But if you put in one like this, that's different and has a different flavor, then it enhances it and enhances the show. And that's what this happened to do. It was, yeah, I mean, Moxley. That guy's, again, you just can't believe it's the same guy. Like, he just can't believe it.
He's walking through the crowd, and what happens with him on night two, and we'll get to that when we talk about night two, but just just how much fun he seems to be having again. It's just infectious. It's like it spreads from the TV or whatever device you're watching New Japan World on. And you're just like, ah, this guy's having fun. I'm enjoying it. So it's one of those things where I figured Moxley was going to get the win. It's been enjoyable.
Absolutely. He's being awesome.
Next, and this match, oh man, this was fantastic. This was great up until the end of the show. But it was Hiromu Takahashi, who was out for 507 days with a broken neck.
I think that's right, yeah.
Challenging my wrestler of the year, Will Ospreay. Spoiler for the future podcast coming. For the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title. Man, I had a lot of fun with this. This was a great match. I thought both these guys looked great. The spot where where Will dives out of the ring and Hiromu ducks it and goes to suplex him and toss him, and Will lands on his feet, charges at Hiromu, and Hiromu throws him through the ropes, and you just see like it looks like it could almost be a botch, but Will just tucks his body so perfectly through the ropes and then does the springboard and pops out and lands on Hiromu. Is just I can't do it justice. It was a fantastic match.
You cannot do it justice. We will say this for years. We'll go, hey, remember that series of moves? Like that's what it'll just be. It'll get a name. It'll be like that series of moves, and that'll be it. Much like that, you know, that Jenna Maroska match, right? Like, it'll be that series of moves that you'll remember for the rest of life. It's my favorite match of the whole weekend. I think it's the best match of the whole weekend, mainly because of that sequence. Most innovative sequence I can ever think of. Even more amazing by the fact that Will Ospreay injured his on his first landing, injured his heel. It's just crazy.
Just a madman.
Yeah, no, I literally watched this match and Ospreay was so damn good. I did not pick him as my wrestler of the year, and I was literally watching it going, Joel was right. I should have picked him. He's just better than everybody else. Except for maybe Okada, who's different, though. It's a different better. But physically, he's – I mean, like Matt Jackson, I love him. He's so damn smooth. Or no, sorry, Nick Jackson, I mean. Yes. I love watching him. Nick Jackson's so damn smooth. But, I mean, Ospreay, jeez.
Of course, Takahashi wins. And that crazy finisher, like just – I saw the move and I was like, holy crap. I think I was just staring at my screen. It's just like,
it doesn't look safe.
No. There were a few times that things definitely did not look safe. But wow, what a match. And it was
it'd be tough to top for a match of the year, honestly.
Yeah.
For me, this is, it's just incredible.
Just the story they told, and just seeing Hiromu back in the ring, especially after the broken neck, and seeing some of his drawings and everything about just the depression that he was dealing with, and just the how tough it was to be away from wrestling, to see him here and to get that title back was a great moment to see. Next up on the docket, we have got Tetsui Naito challenging the IWGP Intercontinental Champion Jay White. You just see Jay White's face and you want to punch it. What did you think of this match?
I really liked it. I know it was probably a little too long. Probably could have taken off like 5 minutes or so, maybe a little more. But again, we talk about the hum of the crowd. It had that hum right at the end. That the crowd was going crazy. They were so into it and buying all the moves. And Jay White's job is to make you dislike him.
Yeah.
I know Jay White doesn't have to wrestle this style. I saw it 3 years ago, the best match in ROH of the year, and one of the top five matches of the year was Ospreay versus White. I know that he doesn't have to wrestle like this. He does this on purpose. People hate it, and that's the point. But it works because the psychology really gets you, really gets the crowd going. And by the end, they really want to see the guy lose.
Oh yeah, they oh man, he's one of the best heels in wrestling right now. He's just the Japanese crowd wants to throttle him. I want to throttle him. I want
two of the top three are probably in Bullet Club of the top three heels, maybe the top two.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's good for Bullet Club because that's what they have to be. That's absolutely what they should be for New Japan. So they've done a good job with that. And Naito getting the win and getting that beginning of that first release of like, okay, we weren't sure what was going to happen with Naito because he's been kind of bounced around where he hasn't been able to make it or crack through. And this was the first step of him cracking through. And I thought this was a big moment for the crowd and for Naito heading into night two.
Yeah, absolutely.
The final match and my favorite match of the whole bloody weekend was Kazuchika Okada versus Kota Ibushi for the IWGP Heavyweight Champion. The winner of this match will go on to face Naito and both belts will be on the line. Okada wins and man, I was on the edge of my seat in this match. None of Wrestle Kingdom got spoiled for me because I had to watch it much later in the day. But oh, this was such just the throat punch, the different spots just hummed. This was incredible. Seeing Okada with the traditional almost wrestling trunks and the long white boots, I see him and I see flair. He is so damn good. I think this is the year of Okada. I just feel like Okada's just gonna tear through it. I mean, that could change, but I just you see this from night one. And you're like, yep, that's the guy. That's the motherfucking star of New Japan Pro Wrestling.
I mean, I love his entrance. The whole entrance, like the video at the beginning was so cool, and then the gear he was wearing to the ring. It looks so cool. Like he is. I mean, when he walks out, you just go, that's it. That's a megastar. Like he's got that it factor that is so incredibly rare. And it's funny because Naito's the top merch seller and the top, most popular. But the it factor, nobody has it like Okada, in New Japan. I don't know if anywhere in wrestling right now anybody has it like him. He's awesome. And the match was great. And again, just perfect psychology. It's funny because we'll complain about how WWE, people are just waiting for the finishers. And in fact, it got to be with a guy like Cena. It's like, you don't even pop the first time you hit that F5. You didn't start thinking it could be the finish until the third one. And you get the same thing with Okada to a degree. You know, I think he had to hit six. Was it six?
I believe it was
Rainmakers.
Five or six Rainmakers.
Yes. Yeah. In order to win. And yet, I don't know, something about, again, because the way the matches build organically, it works. It feels real. It doesn't feel like you're just waiting for the finisher. It feels like that's his best move, and he's just trying to hit it over and over again to put this guy out, and that's the difference.
There is nothing like an Okada finish to a big match. Like, this felt like a big match. Like, this felt like what the main event to Mania should feel like every year. Like, this was just like, oh, man, I can't. These two guys that are at the top of their game are going at it, and it's just going to be incredible. And they absolutely, like, when Ibushi had the little flip switch, and he just went almost psycho and just started beating the piss out of Okada and the throat punch, and just some of the strikes he threw is just like, oh, my God, is Ibushi gone heel? Like, is he the bad guy in this?
The crowd was booing him. They didn't know what to do.
It was phenomenal. Just the finish when Ibushi hit the V trigger, and there was a split second where Ibushi was behind Okada. I'm like, if he hits the one winged angel, I don't know what I'm gonna do. I may jump up. I might jump and start just flying off the handle. Because this was just, it got to that point. And then when Okada hit that Rainmaker, it was just perfect. And then you got the stare down between him and Naito. And that's really where this story all began, was with Okada and Naito. And it's fitting that it's where this grueling long story is going to end.
Well, again, we talk about the long-term booking. I mean, a couple of years ago when Naito doesn't win, you know, then that's to set up this. You know, yeah. There's the long-term plans. The Ibushi, you know, the thing where he just goes into this trance where he doesn't even know what he's doing. He doesn't feel anything. He's not thinking. He has no emotion, and he'll kill you. I like that. I think he's been wanting to do this for a while because back when he was doing the Tiger Mask, I guess it was Tiger Mask W, I think,
yeah,
gimmick, there'd be points like, go back and watch his match against Okada as Tiger Mask W. It's awesome if you haven't seen it. But there's a point where he starts doing something very similar to this. And I saw him do it a couple times in as that character. So I get the feeling this is something that's either, I don't know if they're going to bring that back or if it's just something he's been wanting to do for a while. But I think it's really cool.
I loved it. I thought it was great. It was a great, like, day one of this Wrestle Kingdom was fantastic. The crowd was great. It was just everything you wanted. This is the show you show to wrestling fans that aren't sure about New Japan Pro Wrestling. You show them this. You show them a little bit of The Wire to give them some of the backstory. But, I mean, you don't really need it because Kevin Kelly just did a phenomenal – that broadcast team was amazing. I thoroughly enjoyed – there was at no point where I was like, all right, time to turn off the audio.
They got up to four people in the booth and still made it work. And the reason why is because Kevin Kelly, you'll notice, is directing traffic. And everybody respects him enough to wait their turn.
And that's all you can ask for. And that's why he's been our ongoing commentator of the year. Because yeah. He's just so freaking good.
He does it all. He tells the story. He's entertaining. And he enhances the broadcast and his broadcast partners.
I'm so glad that they have him because he just completes this New Japan of the English commentary. Shifting gears to any last thoughts on night one? Anything that you thought of?
It was the best night of you know of the two or the three if you want to include New Year Dash. But just phenomenal wrestling. But I mean the whole thing was great. Right, the whole weekend is fantastic. But yeah, just the best night.
Yeah. Shifting gears, night two, we're going to kick off with Jushin Thunder Liger's final match. It is him and Sano?
Just say Sano. Yeah.
Sano against Takahashi and Ryu Lee, or Dragon Lee as he's known. He had an ROH
title. I think it's pronounced Ruli, I think is Ruli? What they're saying. I think they were saying Ruli on – I know some people say Ryu and some people are saying – but on commentary it was Ruli.
Ruli? All right.
I believe that's what Chris Carlton was calling him.
I'm gonna trust Chris Carlton. This was Carlton, a great match. Yeah. Takahashi is still standing and still going after his war with Ospreay. This was great, and just knowing that Liger put over the young talent and did the job at the end, and just the respect shown at the end was just it was again that emotional release. It was that final time that you'll see Juice and Thunder Liger wrestle.
It was definitely time, but the thing about it was Liger carried the match for his team and he looked great. He's not doing high flying, but he was so slick with his rustling of the moves and he had a lot of offense and so he still looked like the reason he retired is because he saw Ospreay versus Lee and thought I can't keep up with these guys anymore. Like that was what did it. When he saw a match between them, he's like I can't do this and like I can't go at their level anymore. I'm not at their level. And it's true that he can't do that stuff, but the rustling and the technique and psychology is still there. And it was just great to see him have his moment. I thought it was a little unnecessary for Lee and you know Takahashi to kind of go heel and attack him from behind at that one point, but they made up for it at the end. It was very emotionally very very. I don't know, it was a heavy emotional moment when that match was over.
And I love that they put over Hiromu. Like, this is a really nice moment for him, especially considering how far he's come from his injury. I get the feeling that he's going to be kind of their main staple for the juniors, as Will is more than likely moving on to the heavyweights.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
And I think that's... That's absolutely the right call.
He's the number two merch seller in the company, despite being gone for that long. People love that little cat of his.
Oh, Daryl's fantastic. When Fale tore it up, it crushed me. It was devastating. Daryl is amazing and should be protected at all costs. Shifting gears, we move along to Zack Sabre Jr. versus Sonata for the British Heavyweight Champion. This is a Rev Pro title, so we now have seen a title from Ring of Honor, and now we've seen a title from Rev Pro. I really like Sonata. Like, I really, 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 really like Sonata. He is shooting up the list of guys that I thoroughly enjoy watching. And Sabre, I've enjoyed for a while as well. I thought this was a good match. Like, I think both guys worked well, and I was a little... Now seeing how things played out at New Year's Dash, it makes sense where they went. I was a little surprised they didn't throw the title on Sonata, but seeing where New Year's Dash went makes it a lot more sense.
Plus, I think RevPro's got to want to put the title on Sonata too, and I think they're probably happy with it on Zach. Sorry, and Zach, the fact that Sabre and Ospreay. The next night look like they're being paired off. I like that. That's going to be fantastic.
You can do a series of matches between Rev Pro and New Japan for that title between both those guys, and it makes sense for both those guys to be in that spot.
Sonata is I saw them have a better match against each other at G1, but it was still really good. And again, it's nice that it's a little bit different. It's just a little bit more mat-based technical wrestling, right, because of Sabre and because Sonata likes to do that match with him. So it was a good professional wrestling match.
Yeah, and you need those. Shifting gears, this one I was not surprised, but I was a little surprised at the finish. It was Jon Moxley versus Juice Robinson. I thought Robinson was going to get his win back finally and get the title and vanquish this weird Death Rider that had adopted Shooter. And
I was so disappointed Shooter wasn't out there with him.
I was too. But Moxley retains in a surprising win. I thought this match, I preferred the Lance Archer match more, but I thought this was a good match. I thought there was a lot of good moments, but I felt like you could have trimmed a little bit off of it and had a little bit tighter.
Maybe. It was a very hard-hitting match. It was a good, yeah. Hard-hitting match. And the psychology of the Juice doesn't want to get into the brawl with him, because when he brawls with him, he's going to lose. That he's trying to avoid the brawl, that really works, but he sometimes can't help himself. And so, I mean, and that's kind of what cost him the match. He just can't help himself against Moxley. And so that's, you know, kind of, if he had brawled less, he might have won. It's kind of the idea behind it. So, I mean, really good. I do want to mention the Yo and Sho versus El Fantasmo and Ishimori there. Match that we didn't mention, the juniors tag title match.
Yeah.
Boy, tough spot right after the Liger. Really tough spot. Really good match.
Oh yeah, it was a quality match. I really like that El Fantasmo and the Bone Soldier. I'm going to call him Bone Soldier because if I try to pronounce his name, I'll butcher it. But they had a junior tag team wrestling is fantastic. Junior wrestling in general is always something I enjoy a little bit more of. It was quality. And then at the end of the Moxley Juice Robinson,
and you got the King of Sneaky style. That doesn't hurt.
Yeah, no, that doesn't. That adds to it that much more. And then you've got Moxley wins, and nothing else happens, right, Mo? nothing else. Not the match.
Minoru Suzuki was in I think it was an 8-man, maybe it was a 6-man. I think it was an 8-man the night before, with Zack Sabre Jr. and the Desperado. And I think, yeah, anyway, so Suzuki Goon showed up. They came out to Suzuki Goon's music. And I know people were like, oh, we didn't hear Minoru Suzuki's music. And he's not scheduled for the next night. And he's got the best music. And people were all pissed. Don't question Gato. There's a reason. There's a reason for everything. There's a reason they came out to the Suzuki Goon music the night before, was so that when it played on this night and Minoru Suzuki came out and confronted Moxley, it would be that much more special. It was awesome.
The murderous grandpa, as I like to call him, is going to be great. I really like Suzuki.
My gimmick of the year last year, and you can see why. Because like I've said before, even though he's much smaller than like a guy like Lance Archer or Braun Strowman or any of these guys, if they stepped up to him, you'd go, oh man, he's going to kill that guy. Like he's just like you believe it because there is an element of truth to it. He's a true shooter.
Yeah, and you look at it, he's 51. And he still is going at a nice clip. He'll never be your world champion, but so
think
man,
about that. He's debuting about the same time as Liger,
and he's still going strong.
It's going great.
And yeah, him and Moxley is the match everyone wanted, and all those young lions are going to just suffer greatly in that match.
They suffered in the match with Archer too. So.
That is true. So it's just gonna be more suffering for the young lions. I'm really looking forward to that match. Next
up, better have Shooter Amino back with him.
Shooter comes out and saves him. Runs in and makes the save and fights off Suzuki. And then they set up a feud between.
Maybe not. Maybe you might be going a little too far there.
We'll see. Cause Shooter still has to go on his excursion, doesn't he?
I believe so. Yeah.
Just.
Maybe that's why he wasn't there. Maybe he's on excursion now, and I didn't realize it.
Yeah, that very well could be it. Next up is the Never Open Weight Championship. It is that asshole Kenta defending his title against Hirooki Goto. Some people thought this was going to be Shibata, but cooler heads prevailed, and Shibata is not wrestling, which is probably the best thing. Yeah,
that is it. I mean, Meltzer is confirmed. He cannot pass the physical. He will never wrestle.
Which is good. Because you don't ever want to put anyone in that position. But man, Kenta they want to murder Kenta in Japan.
The right heat. He's got the right heat. It's so incredible. I mean, he was in WWE this time last. I mean, it was not that long ago he came over. When they start chanting Kenta go home and he does that little dance with the shoulders to it and you know things like and he just it pisses the crowd off even more. I love it. He's very entertaining and it was a solid match. I mean the match was really. I mean Goto seems poised for an interesting year too. So I mean they definitely wanted to make him look strong. So
Kenta looks strong in defeat and he definitely. Look strong by the end of the night, but we'll get to that. Next up was Jay White versus Psycho Kota Ibushi. This had a little bit more plunder, but I think it kind of needed it because I think both these guys were pretty beat up by this time, and they were probably both a little sore. So a little bit of plunder didn't hurt it. Just giving these guys a little bit of a break. I still thought it was a great match, and the right guy won.
Yeah, the right guy won for now. Because, again, you have a babyface champion. You need the heel challengers. Ibushi, when he gets his – you don't want him to win here and look like he's going to get his moment and then not get it. He will get his moment. So it's just part of his storyline to lose it. I know people are pissed about it. But, again, you're supposed to be pissed about it. That's what getting heel heat is. And plus, where they're going the next night on New Year's Dash, what they reveal to the Bushi. I mean, has a lot of people very excited. So, and as far as the match, I really liked it. I liked it an awful, awful lot, actually. Again, some people thought it went too long. Some people thought it was too much interference to American style. The fact is that the storytelling and psychology keeps Ibushi super strong. He got screwed and it took everything Jay White and Gato could do to screw him. And Gato and Jay White, you just hate him all that much more. So it was great.
It's exactly because when Jay White gets beat, it's that much of a bigger deal.
Yeah.
And that's what we're built towards. And now we shift gears to the match only known as the Tees. It is Chris Jericho versus Tanahashi, the ace, Hiroshi Tanahashi. When he came out, I was sitting there, I was like, okay, he doesn't have the title, and but it kind of, you look at his shirt and you're like, I think there's something underneath there, but I don't want to disappoint myself, so I'm going to just assume he doesn't have the title. And then he ripped his shirt off, and that beautiful, beautiful piece of gold was under his waist. They were saying AEW, and I was just like, maybe this could happen. Maybe this could happen. And then I remembered that Dave Meltzer had reported that the relationship is not good between New Japan and AEW. There's not happy people on either side. And Chris Jericho made the ace tap out at Wrestle Kingdom. That was a very, very big moment for Chris Jericho, because I don't think that, I don't know, maybe I'm over exaggerating, but I just felt like that was a really big moment to have Jericho tap out the ace of Japan.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I mean, I'm sure, I still think someday AEW and New Japan, I still think someday, but I knew it wasn't going to be here. But I think Chris Jericho now is 2-3 in New Japan. He split with Naito, he's won this, and he lost to Omega, and he lost to Okada. Doesn't that sound right?
Yeah.
So I mean, and that might be it. Like, it's pretty obvious when Jericho came in that it was that he wanted to face those guys that were those top of the mountain New Japan guys, just to say he did it. You know, he wanted to face, like, maybe he might have wanted to face Liger, but it wouldn't have worked out. But, you know, again, just like, you know, Rey Mysterio wants to face Liger, and who can blame him? Their match that they had in 96 on, I think it was Halloween Havoc or something like that, was 2 months after, well, let me see. Liger came back from a tumor in his brain after 2 months, and I think it was 2 months after that. So Liger was only 4 months removed from having the tumor in his brain removed, and he wasn't himself yet still. So they never had the match they could have. So I know Mysterio wanted that. But, I mean, I think that's it. Like, I'm not sure there's anything left for Jericho. He wanted to face Omega because he thought that would be his only chance. He wanted to face Naito. He wanted to face Okada. He wanted to face Tanahashi. He's done it. I don't know who else is there for him. Maybe Ospreay in some degree, or maybe a Suzuki to some degree, but it's not the same as those guys, you know? And so the fact that they were both just having such a blast, that point where Jericho's playing the air guitar and he takes the tumble off the second rope and Tanahashi moves and the camera goes to close up on him and you can see him laughing and smiling. Those guys were having a blast together. And it was just a really good professional wrestling match. From two masters.
Yeah. The only thing that I can make note of from this is it's a little disappointing that portal is closed right now. And you got kind of the feeling when you're watching Jericho leave, it didn't seem like a guy elated in victory. It seemed like a guy is like, this is great and all, but I could have lost and we could have done more. And even in his post-match press conference, you got the feeling that that was something he really wanted, and I think that speaks to Jericho as a person, knowing that if he loses now, they make more money down the line, and just seeing the bigger picture. And I think that's an incredible mind to have behind your company, and especially your world heavyweight champion, because there's a lot of world heavyweight champions that's like, nope, I gotta win.
Wow. And, you know, that's an interesting thing you bring up. And Jericho's always been like that, right? I mean, Jericho was the guy who was like, I came back from being away. It's like, put me in a tag team with Big Show or something. Let's try and elevate these tag titles. And he gets them elevated. And then as soon as they drop them, they go back to them being what they are. But he puts over a Fandango. Like, he's a guy who's always thinking about the business first, knowing that he's good enough to stay at the top. And so he's always like that. He's very... He really gets it. Yes, it's true. It's a damn shame. You know, one of the things, though, I mean, like nowadays, in the past, you would have the politics, you know. I think if it seems to me like the politics are gone from the backstage, and I'm not so sure that's a good thing. You would think it's a good thing, but people aren't protecting themselves. There's no Bruiser Brody or Honky Tonk Man or, you know, Kevin Nash or something like that protecting themselves and making themselves a bigger star than they should because of it. There's no – if they went to Roman Reigns and said, this Friday you're going to put over Dolph Ziggler clean, his answer would be, cool, how do I do that with the best match I can? Yeah. Whereas Brody would have said, no way, he's not on my level. You know, and that's, I think that might actually be a negative that that's missing now. People aren't politicking at all really anymore. Anyways, that was just a little rant.
You look at the Elite. You look at how much heat they took for not making themselves look strong at different points. And it was like, well, we're establishing stuff. We need to put other guys over before we establish ourselves. And it's just back in the day, had that happened, they would have been putting themselves over left, right, and center, because that's just how wrestling was back then. It was about get yourself over. And it's very interesting that it's just very weird to think that Jericho in this regard was kind of the reverse Hunter, where he was politicking to lose.
I know.
It takes a second to wrap your head around it. But Jericho tapped out Tanahashi and paraded around with that title and made sure everyone saw.
I wasn't surprised he won. I'm surprised he tapped him.
Yes.
I would have thought, but I mean, he's the world champion. He's protecting that belt and his brand. But I would have thought it would have been like a cradle pin or something like that.
Yeah, or Judas effect, something along those lines where it wasn't.
Baby faces don't tap.
Is it that? And that just made Jericho look that much stronger. And I wonder if that's laying the idea for if anything ever does get worked out, that makes Jericho a bigger name for them moving forward. And now the final match of the night. It is the Double Gold Dash match. It is the IWGP Heavyweight title and the Intercontinental title on the line. It is Naito trying to redeem himself all the way back from Wrestle Kingdom 8, where he was voted down and not in the main event. And it is taking on the man he just can't beat at Wrestle Kingdom, Okada. Only time he's been able to beat Okada is with the help of Los Ingobernables. And he finally did it. He finally pinned Okada at Wrestle Kingdom. What are your thoughts on the match, Mo?
It was terrific. Again, it's the psychology. It was just so damn strong. And the build, by the end, the crowd was losing it. Even more than any match on the night one, I think the crowd was just losing it by the end. They wanted Naito win. When he hit that Phoenix Splash, I lost it because you don't see him hit that move anymore. Something from his past. And the storytelling from the booking to the in-ring storytelling, sublime. Just tremendous match.
It was great. It was fantastic. I think this is going to be like a movie where I gotta wait a little bit to let it all sink in. I enjoyed the main event for night one more, but I think as time goes on, I think this match is going to grow more and more on me, especially because this is more than likely Naito's one and only shot at being in a spot like this, because I can't imagine his health is going to hold up much longer, especially considering some of the things that they were doing in ring. He's taken a beating, so I'm really glad he got his moment.
Yeah, the psychology of working on the knees with him is, you know, it's a shoot, so it works, and you know, makes for a great match too with the selling and everything. If we can, I only got about 5 minutes left. I have something that's come up. Can we move on to New Year's Dash super quick?
Oh yes, we're done with Wrestle Kingdom. You want to talk about the big matches that are set up for the future?
Well, first off, the Liger and I guess the controversy.
Yes.
Great ceremony. I mean, I knew that they've said this before. Dave Meltzer said this I don't know that the enormity of what Chris Benoit did ever quite translated to Japan and to the crowd, to the understanding. They don't have the same things with keep him off TV, keep him off, you know, don't mention his name. It's just not part of – it never has been the whole time. The crowd is not when there was the vote whether or not he should stay in the Observer Hall of Fame, a lot of the people who voted saying that he should and he did stay in was, I think Meltzer should have just vetoed it and said, no, he's out, but he didn't. He let it go to the vote. And a lot of people in Japan voted for him to stay. I think it's just a cultural thing. So I know people are upset that he was shown in the video and in quite a good moment, but that was the experience people in Japan and Liger had with him.
Yeah.
And probably most of his life. None of that excuses the horrible thing afterwards, but you know, it I think getting upset about this too much is misunderstanding the cultural differences, I think, more than anything. And you know, I wouldn't have put him on there, but don't be upset with them that they did. It's complicated, is what I'm saying.
Yes, absolutely. It's one of those situations where at the end of the day, this was Liger's call. And Liger made the call. They respected Liger, and they let it go. I don't think this should ruin what Liger's ceremony was, because that was a tremendous moment for Liger. But there were reports from John Pollock that the Americans, or the North Americans in the crowd, when they showed Benoit, it was a little bit uncomfortable. Because, yeah. You know, everyone knows. But Liger's retirement as a whole was beautifully done.
When his wife and kid came out, that was so cool.
Yeah.
So cool.
The seeing Tanahashi cry, just...
And then singing the song at the end, awesome.
Yeah.
I actually thought that Liger was such a big star that LIJ for sure should have just come out and bowed to him, even if they didn't get in the ring. I thought even maybe a Suzuki-gun could have done it. Maybe not Bullet Club, but somebody like that. That's the level of respect. But they would not break that kayfabe. And tell you the truth, Liger probably wouldn't want it either.
No, he seems very old school. Yeah. Going through this last little bit of this card, let's talk about the thing you're most excited for. And that's who's challenging for the heavyweight tag team titles. Who is it, Mo?
Well, after they teamed together, Finn Juice turned to their tag team partners on this night after their win, which is Ibushi and Tanahashi, and said, "Hey, how about you guys versus us?" And Ibushi versus Tanahashi were smiling, laughing, and everybody was happy. And Ibushi and Tanahashi teaming up to go after the tag team titles. Yes, I'm excited. The fact that it's Finn Juice or anybody else, it doesn't matter. Though I think Finn Juice will have a great match with them. I can't wait for that. I don't know if it's my most anticipated thing, though, just because Goto versus Shingo, they were so incredible, and Shingo pinned Goto, was setting himself up the next challenger, and that might have been the best match of the weekend. Just that, like, 5 minutes end sequence between the two of them was unbelievable. The crowd was going crazy. So I'm just as excited for that. But yes, those two moments were awesome.
Shingo, I'm so excited to see what he does. I think this is just that first step forward for him. We kind of have an idea where Okada's going. It seems like he's pairing off with Taichi. I'm interested to see where the Rainmaker goes and what the next steps for him are. It'll be very interesting to see how quickly he gets back in that main event.
Well, the thing is, what I'm really curious about is it's not that far away, and I'm really curious about the New Japan Cup, because, I mean, a 16-man single elimination tournament, and you either have historically a redemption story, somebody winning it who needs to get back on top, who was down, like Okada last year, or you're trying to make a new upper mid-card or main eventer like they did with Zack Sabre Jr., 2 years ago. So I don't know who the guy is this year and what role Okada could play in that tournament. I'm very curious.
I got a pick for that.
Yeah.
For the New Japan Cup, Sonata.
Yeah, maybe. He went right to the finals last year. Sonata has a weird charisma because he doesn't have any emotion and really, and he's not like a very gregarious, outgoing personality. But you just respect him and like him, and he's just such a good wrestler. And I don't know, something about you just feel for him. It's a weird charisma. Really works, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. John Moxley brawled with Suzuki, so that match is all set and ready to go. So we're off to the races for John Moxley to potentially die, because Suzuki may kill him if it's possible. And then the final match was Naito and Sonata versus Kenta and Jay White. Jay White and Sonata have paired off, and then Naito and Kenta are going one-on-one because Kenta ruined his moment at the end of Wrestle Kingdom and then ruined his moment again at the end of New Year's Dash. So
people were really pissed about that, that they had Kenta doing it. The security had to help escort Kenta out of the building. That's good. that's old school 80s Riott, Jim Cornette, Nick Bockwinkel type of heat, you know, where they just hate the heel so much and they you know, like his life is in danger. That's good. It's the right kind of heat. People were upset that Kenta did that. That's the point. I wish they had done it different. I wish they had waited backstage as soon as he comes through the curtain, the camera's there, and that's where he gets attacked. So it's not in front of the crowd, so that that moment, the crowd still gets that moment. But hey, I mean, it's still, you know, highly effective. Kenta's so hated in the next night, more hated than Jay White suddenly. It's amazing. But you just look at it. Naito beats Jay White. Okada beats Ibushi. Naito beats Okada. Jay White beats Ibushi, so you think he's the next contender. Then in the tag team match, Sonata, who lost the night before to Zack Sabre Jr. and is the only guy without a title in, because the other guys in LIJ won the open weight six man belts. So he's the only guy without a belt. You think that maybe he's going heel. Is he leaving LIJ? Said he pins White, knocking White out of the number one contender, elevating himself up. And all of a sudden, with White not being the number one contender, he needs somebody. Well, how about the guy who attacked him, who hates him? Like, it's just all rolls together so well in Kenta. And just damn good booking. You know, again, at the end of the night, I guess the heels were both Wrestle Kingdom and New Year Dash. The heel was standing tall over the babyface, creating the heat, and some people were pissed about that. But that's not so unusual. WWE will generally give you the WrestleMania moment, and then on the Monday after Raw, will generally give you the heel heat to set up the next thing. So that's booking 101. That's old school.
Yeah, and I mean, That thing is, it's the perfect one to challenge Naito first, because Naito gets that win over Kenta, and then you just build from there. I'm interested to see if Naito is going to have to pull double duty and defend both titles.
I think that I get the feeling he's defending both titles. It'll always be both titles up. Yeah. That's kind of a New Japan thing, that it won't be. They won't be splitting that up. If you'll look, I can't remember, GHC. That Noah had, I think that was three belts that got combined. There's the Triple Crown Championship, actually. That's the three belts that got combined. That's what All Japan is. It used to be one belt, and then two, and then a third one came in, and it became the Triple Crown Championship. So they'll probably just do that. I always do think that the fact that IWGP is the name of the belts when the promotion is named as New Japan is somewhat confusing to North American fans and such. So
I can see maybe
they're going to do something on that. So yeah. They don't want to go away from tradition. I have to run, Joel. I have to literally run.
Well, you run. Thank you for coming on, Mo, and thank you for talking about Wrestle Kingdom. It was a great night. Everyone should go and check it out. Thank you for coming on, Mo. We will be back, and we will be back later this week with our end of the year and end of the decade podcast. So check them out.
And good night, Ben!